sometimes pronounced as Jehovah in the Old Testament, and that same name is the name of the only God who is our Creator, our Lord while we live, and our Judge when we come to the end. So we thank you all. What a great encouragement it is that you support Vin, his people, our faith, encouragement to each and every one, and the time that you take to simply worship him and study him as we do this evening. For our newbies, we have on Sunday nights now, for a couple of months, as a matter of fact, been studying from thoughts that one Don Bassett, Jerry Bassett's brother, had written into a book called The Joseph Code, which simply is a study of the life of Joseph. So I've been adding some things and subtracting some others, but generally following the outline and topics that he had identified. And so for a second week in a row, we're going to be talking about very similar ideas, kind of the converse, if you will. As last week, we were looking at the great rise to power and the temptation then to pride and arrogance that may have beset Joseph. So we saw how humble that he was. Looked at various verses then dealing with his humility. I've selected this particular photo for our title slide here this evening, as Egypt, of course, is renowned for its colossal statues, for its gargantuan pyramids, for its amazing grandeur. This particular king, Amenhotep III, had a whole bunch of funerary statues that were carved and set up in his name. These particular two, representing the pharaoh upon his death, are 3,350 years old. So you look at them, you see they're rather, worn, obviously. But try to imagine, as we look at so many other, you've seen some photographs in previous weeks, of younger kinds of things that the Egyptians had accomplished that have enormous and exquisite detail. So in the beginning, 3,300 plus years ago, these would have been, of course, very artfully done, skillfully wrought, and would have represented then that king, as I say, upon his death. Joseph lived before this king, but Joseph lived in times that were every bit as magnificent for the sake of the Egyptians as something like this would represent. Joseph lived in a time when Egypt was the world's only superpower, lived in a time when they were vastly wealthy, lived in a time then, of course, where also their kings were considered to essentially be gods who held the power of life and death and could simply whisper, off with his head, to quote from Lewis Carroll, and that would be done. A sense of the due course of law that we enjoy and we appreciate so much in our culture was just not the case. He didn't have to submit it to endless appeals, that go on for years and years and years. He just made up his mind. So when we think about Joseph, suddenly in a moment, instantaneously passing from prison to second most powerful man in a kingdom as magnificent as this, we might take a moment to remember that he would very rightly have some grudges on his mind, some grievances about the way he's been treated for now 13 years, and since particularly he was 17, but probably extending even before that. His brothers had hated him because his father preferred him for likely years before he turned 17, and then they sold him into slavery. That he would have both of those, grievances that he might be thinking about with regard to those brothers. He also had been chained, we learned from one of the Psalms, as he was taken into captivity. The Midianites would not have been, very polite in paying much deference and care to this teenage boy that they're only going to have for a few weeks so that they can sell him for a profit. Why should they respect him? His own brothers sold him to us. So he's mistreated, he's in chains. He might have remembered how difficult that particular journey would have been. Then he was the model slave, did nothing but obey his master, who prospered under everything that Joseph did. But then the wife, of course, lied about him. Potiphar throws him into jail, doesn't appreciate what's gone before, doesn't trust him because of it. So that both the slave master and the wife have abused him terribly. And then, saw this artist's drawing from last week, Then he gets tossed into jail for at least 2 years. And while there, two of the king's servants, depicted as the baker in the center and the cupbearer on the right with that kind of helmet on, they have dreams. Joseph interprets the dreams. He interprets them properly, unhappily. The one in the center will die, and he told him so, and he does. The one on the right is representing the cupbearer. He is freed, returns to his high position of glory and prominence and wealth and influence over the king as cupbearer. The only thing Joseph asked was, remember me when you get back to your station. And 2 years later, he does. But it's 2 years later that he does. And so he stays in jail, completely forgotten. That's quite a list of grievances, isn't it? When suddenly you hold the power of life and death. You hold the power then of vengeance. You face the temptation of it's get even time. And you would have the power to hunt down each and every one of these people on your list, to see that they suffer before they die, if that is your will, to answer to no one, to see instantaneously that your long-sought justice, perhaps long-meditated seeking of justice, can now, with the snap of my fingers, be made so. That's got to be some kind of a serious temptation. So as I say, this is something of the corollary that we'll be studying tonight to last week's lesson. We contemplated the humility that is seen time and again in Joseph. Tonight, I'd like for us to remember, first by turning over here to Genesis chapter 41 and reading verses 46 through 52, that as this man is thrust into this great position of controlling all of the grain in Egypt, because he has rightly interpreted now Pharaoh's dream as well. He is given all this vast power, but look how he wields it in Genesis 41 and in verse 46. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. Absolute master of everything he sees. And during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly, so he gathered all the food of 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt, placed the food in the cities, placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. Now before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. And Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh. Now watch for it. For he said, God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. And he named the second Ephraim. For he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So, brethren, as we immediately see him go to work, we see him do exactly what he always does. In jail, how did he apply himself as a prisoner? Model, faithful, humble, and in short order, he becomes what over the prison? Number two, in command, just like he did over all of Egypt. What kind of a slave was he for Potiphar before he got thrown in jail? Faithful, loyal, and true. Diligent. Devoted. He has an assignment. He will fulfill it to the very best of his ability. And now we have 7 years overview. God is in charge of my life. God is first in my life. God is what matters. God is all that matters. I'll knuckle under, do the best job I can. And so he begins storing up the grain. He will rescue not just these Egyptians, but all of his family as well. He will save the entire nation and its superpower status, because he's the kind of a guy who always thinks first of God. And what about the temptation to justice we just read? God, in verse 51, is memorialized in the name Manasseh because he made me forget all my trouble. Now, brethren, that was quite a list of grievances. What would mere mortal men, I suppose, and women too, what would most people do? They stew on those grievances. They remember them. They treasure them. And they just, you know, are consumed by them. They become bitter and angry, and they are twisted by this hatred that rises up in them. So what did Joseph do? Does he take all this power and all this money and influence and start killing people? No, he says, God made me forget. I forget it. Forget it. It's water under the bridge. So, you know, just forget it. Now, brother, you know, I don't often stray into politics and all the rest of this, but a topic has popped up again in recent weeks that pops up periodically. I've seen it a time or two in decades, you know, gone by. Should we start paying reparations to the descendants of people whose long ago, 200 years ago, forefathers and mothers were enslaved when they were brought to this country? Should we pay reparations to their descendants 2 centuries later? Well, think about this passage. Is Joseph paying any attention to the grievances even that were personally visited upon him? Let alone looking back 2 centuries and trying to figure out what the cost of that should be today? When you harbor these kinds of animosities, when you harbor this kind of grief, when you dwell on these kinds of things, it's not healthy. It's not helpful. And it's such a crazy pursuit, at least in my mind. How do you figure out what the proper check amount should be for the 200 years later descendant of somebody who got mistreated? Well, how do you do that? I don't know. And nobody else does either. But a godly person, a person who has a respect for their Creator, a wise individual, is not tempted to try and get payback in any form. What are they thinking about? The future. The job at hand. My family. Because all things should be done in the presence of God and in the absence of dwelling on the evil that's been done to me or my ancestors in the past. So what I'd like to do, you know, for the rest of this evening, another one on my famous lists, I guess, but we're just going to go down through, I'm going to fill this whole side, in fact, you know, with that size print, just going to go rapidly through a number of other passages and make a brief, you know, comment about them on the side there. This would be our last chart here. But all we're going to do is just think about the opposite of humility, which is pride, and therefore the opposite of humility's result. Accept it and forget it. The opposite of that is vengeance. Remember it and do something about it. I'll show you. So last week we studied the humility. This week we're thinking about the vengeance. In both cases, here is one wise man. So come to chapter 42, the very next chapter, and let's look at verses 7 through 10. Joseph saw his brothers. They're starving now back in Israel. They come, you know, not knowing who he is. They come seeking grain. Joseph saw his brothers, and he recognized them. But he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. Now, lest you get the wrong idea, yeah, he is. He's showing some vengeance here, you know. He's going to make them suffer. Brother, I really don't think that's the case. I think it's the cover. He's got to play the role here. He needs to stay hidden, you know, who he really is, so he can learn about them, find out what their attitudes are, you know, what kind of men they are now. It's been a while. And so, and I don't think this harshly here is vengeance at all. It's a way of protecting his identity. This is how a high official in Egypt would certainly behave, and so he does. But he said to them, "Where have you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." But Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the grievances, the mistreatment. No, he remembered the dreams which he'd had about them. You remember those dreams, two of them. You'll be bowing down to me. He's remembered God's prophecies. He's remembered God's plan. Years. When he might have been sorely tempted to think, God has abandoned me, I'm being mistreated, maybe I misunderstood the dreams. Instead, he remembers these dreams, and he said to them, in character, you are spies. You've come to look at the undefended parts of our land. They said to him, no, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. So what have we got? We've got a man whose God influences everything he does first and foremost. I remember the dreams. I remember what God said. Then we come, just a couple of chapters later, to 45 in the first 8 verses. In the first 8 verses of Genesis 45, Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, have everyone go out from me. There was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. Now, you know the story, I'm trusting. Quite a bit of time's gone by. They've made a trip back to Israel and return, you know, so skip 3 chapters. But in the course of all of this, clearly he's testing them and remaining in character. So now he says in verse 2, put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his money for the grain. He did as Joseph had told him, and as soon as it was light, the men were sent away, they with their donkeys. They had just, I'm reading 44, you're supposed to put your hand up when I read the wrong chapter, people. I'm sorry, 45. Joseph could not control himself. Okay, so now verse 2, he wept loudly. The Egyptians heard it. The household of Pharaoh heard it. And then Joseph said to his brothers, I'm Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers couldn't answer him. They were dismayed at his presence. So suddenly this guy who's been harsh, this guy who's been pure Egyptian, this man who's been so powerful and fearsome, you know, is hysterical and in tears. And he must be out of his mind. He says, I'm your brother, who they figure must have been dead for years. So, is my father alive? And they're just struck dumb. In 4, Joseph said to his brothers, please, come closer to me. They came closer. He said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves. Wait a cotton-picking minute here, my dad used to always say. Wait a cotton-picking minute here. Don't you be grieved? Don't you be angry? Talk about you on the other foot here. Don't you be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. The famine has been in the land these 2 years. There are still 5 years in which there'll be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth, to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he's made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his household, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. 3 times, whose name has he invoked? God's name. And whose feelings is he concerned about? Well, they might be sad. They might be mad at themselves. They might be self-recriminating, you know, and we can't have that. Because he is not a man of what? He's not a man of vengeance. He's a man of God. Joseph sees God in everything, even if he's got to wait 13 years to see the plan in action. It's at least 13 years since the dreams and all he's been through. He never forgets his God. He sees his God, you know, everywhere. He sees God's plan everywhere. And farthest thing from vengeance, here's a man who says, I'm just so worried you guys will be unhappy. Don't feel bad about yourselves. You sold me into slavery here. You know, it's just you were all part of God's plan. It's okay. Please, don't be sad. Now, brother, truly, I guess I've got a lot of growing to do. How about you? Okay. I like to think, well, maybe I'd read my Bible enough that I could name my children. I forget all about the bad that's been done to me. And then I could go ahead and be so worried about how badly you would feel for selling me, lying about me, slavery, prison, you know, all of this, that my main concern is that you not be unhappy. I like to think, raise your hand if you know me and you think, yeah, Larry, you would do that. Yeah, I thought so. It's a single hand goes up. I'm not sure I could either. What an amazing guy this is. I know, you think, well, he has second in command in Egypt and all that. Well, I get that. But that's as much a temptation as it is anything else. Such love. Such devotion. But such understanding. Such wisdom. Such patience. So that he becomes the last man on earth who is the most powerful man on earth with, you know, the ability. He's still the last man on earth who would think in terms of vengeance. Payback. I'll show you. Let's set the record straight. Move on into chapter 50. We've touched on this a couple of times before. It is the last chapter in Genesis. It's a great summary, in a sense, for the book as much as it is for the life of Joseph. He's come to the end of that life. He's about to die. It's been long and full. But in chapter 50, at verse 14, after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers, all who'd gone up with him to bury his father. Remember, he wanted to be buried back home. When Joseph, verse 15's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said exactly what Joseph never did. They're kind of still the same guys. What if Joseph should bear a grudge against us? Has Joseph shown any grudge? Is there any reason to think that? Well, what if he should and pay us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him? He told them not to worry about that. He told them it was a part of God's plan. He was perfectly okay with it all. He couldn't possibly have gone any farther out of his way to prove it. And here these poor guys still are. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father charged before he died. It's a complete lie. Thus you shall say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. Now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the their invoking God's name in their lie of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Do you see now why he might? If you get Joseph's character, this magnificent spirit, this awesome personality, if you get the fullness that God is in him, do you see now? He would just be so disappointed, so brokenhearted. I didn't want you to worry about this, you guys. I told you not to worry about this. Now here you come again. You just make the grief at the loss of my father even worse. It's like you couldn't wait 10 minutes after the funeral to come and invoke God's name that I forgive you when I already have. Don't you? It's just breaking the man's heart. So, in verse 19, Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? Is God that much present in any one of our lives? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them, spoke kindly to them, and Joseph stayed in Egypt, he and his father's household, and he lived to 110 years. Joseph saw the third generation of Ephraim's sons. The name means, I forget. God helps me forget. Also, the sons of Machir, the sons of Manasseh, were born on Joseph's knees. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God. We're getting used to that in his life now, aren't we? But God, but God, but God. Every time the man opens his mouth, no matter what is going on in this life, but God is what's on his mind. God will surely take care of you, bring you up from this land to the land which he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What a prophecy. The beginning of his life as a teenager and now at the end, the prophet Joseph. And Joseph at 25 said to the sons of, made the sons of Israel swear, God will surely take care of you. You shall carry my bones up from here So Joseph died at the age of 110 years and was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. Am I in God's place? No. Now, from this point on, we'll go very quickly, just note 5 or 10 minutes maybe. We're going to look at some passages that are not about Joseph or from Joseph. But Don did this, and I saw wisdom in it, added some of my own. Would like for us to say, well, okay, now we see the character of the man himself, and we see how far from vengeance he is, this man who lived, 5,000 years ago. And so let's now, though, look at some principles about vengeance that God has added in the years that followed. In Solomon, for instance, in the book of Proverbs. But first, let's look at James in chapter 1 and verses 12 through 20. So, because, brethren, what we're seeing here is how, long before these additional passages we're about to look at were ever written, how Joseph is the perfect embodiment of them all. So now that we've seen chapter 42, chapter 45, 50, we go see what he would be the perfect example of, for instance, here in James 1, verses 12 through 20. 12. Blessed is a man who perseveres under trial. What was Joseph's life like? Once he's been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. How many times does he invoke God's name? How much does he love his God, this Joseph? Verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted. Joseph had his fair share. I'm being tempted by God. Let nobody blame God. Well, Joseph certainly never did. For God cannot be tempted by evil. He himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then when lust is conceived, it gives birth to sin. When sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good thing bestowed and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. Now, stop there for just a second. Would it be a pretty good and perfect gift if tomorrow you were given all power over the United States of America? Pretty good and perfect gift, I guess. Some temptations involved, but that's what happened to Joseph. Did Joseph understand his good and perfect gift? Yes. But in the preceding verses, when he was tempted for 13 years before that perfect gift, was he ever resentful? Was he ever faithless? This man knew how to do anything that life can throw at you, from the worst to the absolute best. So, he is the living embodiment of anything that can be experienced in life and how to do it properly. Do not be deceived, brethren, verse 17. Every good thing bestowed, every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there's no variation or shifting shadow. In the exercise of his will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, so that we might be, as it were, the first fruits among his creatures. This you know, my beloved brethren, but let everyone be quick to hear. And now I'm thinking about the way Joseph handled his brothers when he recognized them, and how he queried them, how he sent them back, and how they returned, and sent them back again, and they returned again, and how he worked with putting the silver in the mouth of the sacks of grain, and all this. Let everyone be quick to hear. Well, Joseph was that. Slow to speak, held his tongue magnificently. Slow to anger. Well, I know no place in the life of Joseph he was so slow that in 110 years he never got there, did he? That's pretty slow to anger, 110 years. But he never made it. Not angry, ever. The anger, here's the punchline in verse 20. The anger of man does not what? Does not achieve the righteousness of God. Was Joseph right at age 13 that his parents and his brothers would one day bow down to him? Yes, he was right. Was he right that there'd be 7 years of famine and then 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine? Well, sure. Was he right that then these are my brothers and I should not bear a grudge?
And if I let myself descend into anger, the anger of God, of man, does not accomplish the righteousness of God. Had he lifted his hand with all that power to destroy the brothers that had done this to him, then the entire plan that he had been given in vision, clear back to when he was 13 years of age and 17 years ago, and plus however he lives to 110, would have been defeated, wouldn't it? His anger would not have accomplished God's righteous plan. So, he becomes the example for us of everything James is talking about in chapter 1. This is why we have passages in the Roman letter and 1 Corinthians telling us that these things that were written beforehand were written for us, that Christians were to learn from these things. Now, we do a short series from the book of Proverbs, and we'll be done. Proverbs, of course, being short statements. Chapter 24 in the Proverbs is thusly, if I can just get turned over there. Proverbs chapter 24, verses 16 through 20 is... I'm going to read a little bit more, so I'm trying to get at a little bit more than what was read at the beginning of the assembly. So this was our featured verse this evening. But start back at 16. A righteous man falls seven times and rises again. Think about Joseph's life. A righteous man can just get mauled by life. A righteous man can just get ground to dust by life. But the wicked stumble in times of calamity. This verse finishes after telling us that seven times, no matter how many times, the righteous fall. What will they do? Get back up and bear the grudge to prove it. No, just get back up. So now comes verse 17. With that in mind, don't rejoice when your enemy falls. Don't let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and be displeased and turn away his anger from him. Do not fret because of evildoers or be envious of the wicked. There'll be no future for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. But should it be put out by you? Now, brother, I'm not taking sides. Please know that. I'm not trying to establish, you know, any grounds by which you could determine how I vote. But when they were shouting, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up! Is this what Proverbs 24 says? No. And when Manafort gets sentenced to 47 months in prison, and the other side is shouting, unfair, too little, too little. Is anybody right in any of that? No. Should you rejoice when your enemy falls? Or be all upset because he hasn't? Is that Joseph's code? No. I'll call my son Manasseh to forget it all. That's Joseph's code. So, brother, don't get caught up in all the fever of politics. Don't get caught up in all the stuff that goes around, you know, us as Christians. Walk the straight and narrow path the way Joseph did. And then let what come. Come! But what you'll do is, God will influence everything you see or think about. Joseph will see God in everything. He'll know his place before God. We'll start living like Joseph did too, perhaps. And here in Proverbs chapter 24, we will protect ourselves because that is a dire warning in that passage. When you're harboring the resentments that Joseph never did, when you're just eager for people to go to jail for years and years and years and years, throw the book at them! How do you feel about Jesse Smollett? A name I've never heard, until it hit the news. Lying scoundrel misrepresenting, you know, part of a large part of the American population. What do you want for Jesse? Don't you feel it? He could go to jail for 60 years. How many of you thought it's not enough? This is not Joseph, brethren. Our lives are Christian lives.
but they should mimic His. We heed these warnings, and we live lives that don't care what goes on in the world around us. Because where are we headed? We're headed for heaven, where none of this will ever be. And this is, we're just a vapor. It appears for a little while. It's meaningless. Don't sink into the depths of that temptation to vengeance with your anger. Don't care how guilty they are, how much damage they've done, because of what we're going to find in the next couple of verses. Look at chapter 24 again, same chapter, but 29. Do not say, thus I'll do to him as he's done to me. I'll render to the man according to his work. Don't ever say that, the proverb has said. Heed that warning as well. And then watch this string as we bring our class to a close. Note that in Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verses 35 and 36, it says this. 32, 35 of Deuteronomy. Vengeance is mine. Vengeance is mine and retribution. In due time, their foot will slip, for the day of their calamity is near, and the impending things are hastening upon them. For the Lord, not me, will vindicate his people, will have compassion on his servants, when he sees that their strength is gone, and there's none remaining, bond or free. Vengeance is mine, Deuteronomy 32 says. And who's speaking here? He's tempted to say Moses, I know, but who's he speaking for? For the Lord God of heaven. And watch this in Romans 12. In Romans 12, and down in verses 18 and 19, check this out. If possible, so far as depends on you, be at peace with all men, except Hillary, Paul Manafort, Cohen. There aren't any exceptions. No exceptions. As far as it depends on you, be at peace with everybody. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it's written, and here's a quote from Deuteronomy 32, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Now skip to Hebrews, and our lesson will be complete. In Hebrews chapter 10, we have this. 10th chapter of the Hebrew letter, and verses 30 and 31. Page turn. Hebrews 10:30. We know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay. The Lord said that. Certainly Joseph never did. And again, the Lord will judge his people. It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And brethren, it always has been. So what's our lesson about tonight? We saw the humility last week of Joseph. Today we see his fireproof resistance to vengeance of any kind. Why? Because as you look at the list, it is always God foremost on his mind. And if that's the case, then vengeance is not mine. It's not mine. Three times Old Testament and New gets quoted. It's the Lord's. And in due time, he'll take care of it. So just check out on the whole temptation to vengeance. That will destroy you. And look at the life of Joseph. It made him the man he was. The perfect player for God's plan, fully accomplished in the life of that one man. The salvation of two nations, Egypt and the Jews, because he named his kid Manasseh. I'm just going to forget about all the wrong that's been done to me. Let God take care of that. If you're not a Christian, become one tonight. If you are a Christian, you see yourself struggling, need some fortifications, what the saints are for. We'll study with you, we'll pray with you, any way we can help. Let it be known, please. Come speak with me as we stand.